Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Point Taken. We're back after a week hiatus. Greg was on vacation. He's come back sun-kissed and rested.
I was sunburned for quite a while.
Oh, yeah?
What was the week off like for you? You know, you worked a regular,
regular
round of things and slept in. You didn't have that one
it was lovely.
Hellish morning when you're up before lunchtime.
Like right now?
Like right now. Do people ever ask when you record this? How do you find the time? How do you find the patience?
More so my coworkers at night know because I come in extremely tired that evening.
Yeah.
First world problem, though. Everything's fine. But you had a good trip?
Yeah, absolutely. We were an hour west of London. So the Grand Bend area. Have you ever been up to that area?
I have been, yeah. When I was at school, I went up briefly. Not for a long time, though.
Cutting class? That doesn't seem like something...
No, weekends, of course. Weekends.
Your parents or others who look out for you would approve of.
Okay.
In a university culture. I skipped less classes as I went on. I realized the importance of punctuality. Third and fourth year. In first year, I didn't know it very well.
I was a bit of a goody two-shoes, so I went to a lot of classes.
You changed so much. Well, you're not late for shifts. I think that's
important.
That, yeah, that is indeed a...
You were here first today, but again, you're so well-rested.
Well, that's it.
You went to a Tigers game when you were there, right?
Yeah, we drove on Wednesday. We're about 40 minutes from Sarnia, and then about an hour from Sarnia. People in Ontario know they can go kind of two ways to go to a... Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You can go that Sarnia Blue Water Bridge or the Windsor Ambassador Bridge, and we chose Sarnia because we're up in that area. But yeah, perfect weather. I went through the day and a half of sunburn. What would you say? Now, I've been polling people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that personal, but everyone's experienced it. What would you say the most injurious part of the body to have burnt is? I think there's an underrated body part no one talks about that's really bad when sunburnt.
The back's
not great, but that's not my answer.
I've burnt behind my knees, and that really, really hurts to walk. I've burnt that very badly. I also burnt my lips once when I was 10, and they blew up like a...
Mrs. Brady has that right now. Rachel looks like it's a collagen injection.
Like a blowfish, yeah.
Yeah, she looks like she was trying to get some movie role, and they said We need luscious lips from the leading lady.
Do whatever you got to do.
But, I'm hoping the lips return to form at some point. She's like, stay away, completely away.
From experience, they do. But it's quite painful.
It feels worse than it looks. It's one of those feeling worse than it looks things.
Okay, what are you going to say?
The top of the feet.
Oh, no, that's not that. I mean, it's not as...
I had 24 hours where I felt like I was limping in agonizing fashion from about mid-Monday to mid-Tuesday. And you know you're going to bed, and it'll be better in the morning, but the sleep is the pain.
Oh, it heats up under the sheets.
But I actually... No, I found it... Open air heated it up, and I needed the hottest, warmest, thickest blanket I could find on top of the feet. And then it's 28 degrees, and you're sleeping, and you're going to contract malaria. There's a lot of...
Oh, wow.
There are a lot of
that
issues.
That turned quickly.
Yeah, I make it sound so unattractive, the vacation. It was actually great, besides the burnt feet.
I know someone who burnt the bottom of their feet. That's worse.
That doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, if you're lying on your stomach.
And you don't... And they,
right? Your feet are pointing
just kicked
the sun.
Up in the air.
Yeah, you fall asleep, and the rest is history.
And you don't think to coat the... You don't think to go all SPF 40
I never put sunscreen on the bottom of my feet.
It's a slippery...
This
commute.
Conversation will come back to haunt me. So you got burnt at the Tigers game, or
not so much?
Okay.
We were able to stay out of the sun, but I don't think there's much like the open air baseball experience. See, 3 weeks ago, I think I was raving about the minor league baseball experience going to Rochester, New York. So I go back to where I worked for 9 years. So that's always fun, and I saw people I knew. One of those people, John Morosi, is going to join us on the podcast from Fox Sports and MLB.com with the All-Star game this week. It's very slow week in sports. I don't need. You're doing the late run this week. I saw you last night with Eric Thomas, and you gotta stretch out the word Aaron Judge. You gotta stretch out the words to make an hour's time, don't you?
I always joke because the Home Run Derby highlight pack is probably the longest highlight pack of the year. I think it's broken up into three parts per round, and then we also show some boards in between. We just milk it for all it's worth.
Sportsnet statistics show you showed 68% of the actual home runs hit last night. which is like 130 or something.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah. But yeah, so at the ballpark, though, it made me realize, and then I read this week, it's All-Star game, and there would be people listening who went to people say, when's the last time the Jays had an All-Star game? It was 1991. And Sky Dome then was in its third season, its second full season, and it was all the rage, right? Like, when do you remember the first time you went to Sky Dome and you're looking around? It's like being on a spaceship. There's
very, very cool, but that's
state of the art.
Yes, and it's very cool though for maybe people like me who at a young age I went and I'd never experienced Major League Baseball in any other setting.
That's right.
And then you go to another ballpark and you think, oh, this is what baseball smells like and looks like and feels like.
Yeah, and it was right at that time, because I think 2 years later, Camden Yards went up in Baltimore, and then they built the ballpark that's in Arlington right now.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought, well, this is the way to do it. We make it, we go grass, we go outdoor air, we don't make it multi-purpose, so you can't have a tractor pull in there or motocross on a giant track of dirt. And we make it like a ballpark, and nothing else happens there. And so we missed that sort of window in Toronto. So we thought we had the coolest, and we did for a long time. And who's to quantify the sort of the home advantage? But you've been to big playoff games. You've been to big games when the dome is shut and there's 46,000 people going crazy. And you feel like you're giving the home team an advantage. You just do. You can't quantify it, but you know it's helping.
Yes.
The noise with the roof.
But as a fan, I much prefer it when the roof is open. And I much prefer to be at a ballpark that is a ballpark. It's so stuffy in there when the roof's closed.
It's stuffy.
And it's so loud. Even if it's home field advantage, it's an echoey loud.
That's right.
It's not as fun loud as, say, another ballpark. That's where Safeco has it right. Safeco's really nice.
That's someone I'm not being to.
They've kind of opened it up into the street. I don't know what the best way to describe it is, but you can kind of see from the concourse, you can see out and you can see into the diamond.
And this is,
can you tell that I'm not a structural architect or engineer by this description?
Well, never give up.
Okay, yeah.
Who knows how long broadcasting goes for any of us?
Ain't that the truth.
So architecture school sounds like a great option.
Right.
But even in Toronto, people say, you get the air now and then, and it's open a lot in the summer. And yes, you see, you know, the cars going up the CN Tower, but you don't see the city. So it's neat to go to a park and see old buildings, new buildings.
Mm-hmm.
There's great waterfronts. I've walked past the park in San Francisco a couple of times, but I've never gotten to go to a Giants game.
Same.
You've never been
walked by.
Yeah. And
see, it looks beautiful.
You see where all those idiots are in like kayaks who are willing to dive in for like a...
Wouldn't that be kind of fun, though?
Like a Hunter Pence home run ball.
Wouldn't that be fun,
It
though?
Would be. Yeah, to dive into the...
Well, no, but to be out there for one game... Even if you just called them idiots?
That's right. That's right. Well, for the home run derby.
I want to be one of those idiots.
They're very dedicated. So I don't know whether when I read that there's talk about them retrofitting the Rogers Center. And so you get excited because you're like, oh, sure, that'd be great to make $200-300 million. It's not our money. It might be our company's. $200-300 million of improvements, as long as it's not tax dollars. But then you go, why can't we just take the whole step forward and build a brand new outdoor park? Like I might miss it. Who knows how long we'll live, but I might miss it in my lifetime. Maybe you'll get it in yours. Maybe 20 years from now it's happening, because I figure if they're going to retrofit Rogers Center, they're going to make that sucker last for 15, 20, 25 mm-hmm. more years. And I do think people will be mixed about doing that. They're like, sure, make it nicer for us. If we're going to have a park, we want to have it nicer. And there is the multi-purpose thing, like you can have U2 come in where it's harder to do on a baseball field,
yeah.
And you can do stuff in the winter like Disney on Ice and all that stuff.
It's all about making money, and you can make more money with the way it is.
I know, but there's that romanticism with these, mentioned Seattle, Detroit, people who've been to Pittsburgh, been to Denver, been to Baltimore. They have that romanticism about baseball that's missing here. We can say that. It's missing.
Yeah, and for people in Ontario, too, I'd suggest if you want to get a good feel for it, and it's not the big leagues, but where the Buffalo Bisons play.
That's right.
It's
right
a really
highway.
Cool ballpark, right as you cross the border. It's just, again, it's what I said before. It's something about, and I know it sounds funny, but the smell of baseball and just the feel of it. You just don't get that in a concrete
dome. And if I wonder whether it's for most people roof or grass, because I don't know whether we'd be complainers in April and May, and if you're in the playoffs, you're in the playoffs. Like those Chicago-Cleveland World Series games are played on like, you know, November 1st, November 2nd. They're cold, but you don't feel it because you got that adrenaline surge. People might be less tending to walk up to an April game where it's, you know, pouring rain down and it's 8 degrees out. I get that. Like, you want the comfort, right? You don't wanna wear a snowsuit to an April 15th. Do they still make snowmobile suits?
Probably.
An April 15th game against the White Sox, you don't want to sit there in the freezing cold. But then there's the grass. And you mentioned the smells and there's the sounds of the game and the smells of the game. And turf doesn't smell.
No.
Unless there's a lot of, like, chewing tobacco on it and it's not been vacuumed up.
That's
exactly.
Not a good smell.
Pretty gross. So I don't know whether it's the turf, the grass, it's the everything. But all this is to say that I think Jays fans have it really good right now.
They want more, though.
They want more.
Jays fans want more.
It's amazing. They lead the American League in attendance, which is incredible with a record at this All-Star break, 6 games under .500. But I do think it's really interesting to wonder when it, I don't know when it all turned and it became really cool to go to games again, but it is that right now. Like, if they have something that, let's say, for lack of a better example, the Argonauts don't have. If I said to you, I got 4 tickets to the Argonauts game Saturday, and I don't even know if they're playing Saturday, would you want them? You'd be like, I don't know. Something might be going on. But if I said I got 4 tickets to Jays Yankees on a Friday, you'd be like, oh, my God, sure, I'll go. And if I don't go, I'll find someone who will.
That's true.
This is the tricky thing
that's a threat.
With the other sport. that's not a promise, but a threat. So but I don't know how much. There's all this talk of rebuilding. I know you did a feature on it either a couple nights ago. For people listening, it'd be sometime this week. And there's that great debate about what would happen to attendance if a player or 4 got traded. What would happen if they were an under 500 team for a few years? When would people stop going? And I think that's a fascinating cultural thing because it's such a young, vibrant, excited crowd to go
fan
to
base,
these games.
Yes, yeah. And as you said, it's cool. And the thing about attendance this year, too, is even though we're at the unofficial halfway mark, attendance should be fine for the rest of the season. And it's been good this season because people buy tickets in advance, too, right?
September's tougher. If they're not in it and it's September, people might eat the tickets.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of flex packs and early tickets, just because of how the seasons have gone in the past couple of years, people buy in advance.
Well, 2 years ago, it's unbelievably, and I want to say you would have been in Vancouver for a large chunk of that summer.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how tough it was to get a ticket. Like David Price's first start on the Monday against the Twins or this game or that game, and they just never lost. I mean, they never lost. They made up the 7 games on the Yankees. They took basically a 4 or 5 game lead of their own going into past Labor Day, and I don't even know that it's ever been the place to be as much. Even when they were winning and doing great, it felt like, as you said, a lot of those tickets were season tickets, and kind of it was a rich older crowd because they were the ones buying in the first. It's a little bit like Leaf games can feel that way, like lower bowl guy, look out, lower bowl family, look out. But it was cool, it was young, it was loud, it was in a way a good obnoxious. It was like against the other team. It was just crazy to be at those games 2 years ago. And it's still got
memories.
That cool vibe, the memories, exactly.
I know.
So we'll see how they do out of the gate against the Detroit Tigers. We can go into that slightly with John Morosi from Fox Sports and MLB.com. You had to do the home run derby highlights this week. What was it? Tell me quick what that was like.
I just said Aaron Judge about 300 times.
I know. And Gary Sanchez knocked off Giancarlo Stanton. I saw Joel Embiid caught 2 home run balls. The Philadelphia 76ers.
Giant hands.
But everyone's making a big deal about his hands. I don't want to go to Donald Trump on everybody, but his hand, he's 7'1" and like 290. I wouldn't have thought he'd have tiny hands.
Well, no, that would be
for a
strange
basketball player. But he caught
still,
2.
Still, the baseball looked like a golf ball in his hand.
Yeah, without the dimples. There's seams, but no dimples. So
I wonder if J.P. Morosi, if he caught any home run balls.
It's very possible.
Hope he wasn't in the outfield. That's danger zone number one. That's where people just risk their lives.
And the kids run themselves over also in the outfield.
Oh, it's just a mess. That's what I'm saying.
You can imagine.
It's absolutely.
Yeah. But at least it's children on children carnage. There's always that ugly highlight where there's a guy who elbows somebody out of the way and a kid flies over a seat. And there's almost a worse accident than there ends up being. So we'll do that. John Morosi coming up basically now. We'll do what up with that. I'm sure, with some Wimbledon thoughts, some Raptors thoughts. We're in the midst of the fortnight, All England Classic. It does feel, in a quick note, it does feel different that it's a week later. Because
it
always
feel
think,
a little strange.
I always
yeah.
feel like the tournament is meant to end that week right after July 1st and
yep,
4th.
It should be done.
And if they had, you would know this, they feel like they've had better weather because they've waited a week?
They have. It has been very good weather, hence why people are complaining about the courts being all beat up. They're thinking it's because it's just been pretty hot past.
A good 3-hour rain delay keeps the grass green from time to time and irritates the players. It's great to have him on. It always is. Sportsnet Television and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You see him on MLB Network. You see him on a lot of the Fox National games, be they on Saturdays, be they the 4 o'clock games, the evening games. And, of course, when playoff time comes, he's awfully busy. Was front and center for a lot of the World Baseball Classic games as well. Also, let's be perfectly honest. I mean, numbers aren't everything. But Carolyn, 236,000 Twitter followers.
Look at that.
We've never divided that up nationally. John Morosi joins us now on the Sportsnet Point Taken podcast. Have you ever wondered how many of those are your friendly, fine feathered Canadian friends?
Ah, yes.
I have wondered, Greg and Carolyn, and actually I am here to tell you that I owe you, you both, and all of your fellow Ontario residents a great debt of gratitude, because this is the true thing. I looked it up once. I actually have more followers from Ontario than any state in the U.S.
Wow.
True story. So, I, Greg, and we talked about this last week, my friend. I am now inching ever closer to that honorary Canadian citizenship.
Is there something on the form? Yeah, I was going to say, the official form, I didn't know there's a place to fill in your Twitter followers.
Twitter followers by state, province, or territory. And yes, Ontario has the number one place in my heart in that category as well.
So that means like what? Like Lady Gaga can live anywhere? She can, like, she has like 9 million followers, so she can claim any citizenship?
Right.
That doesn't seem right to me.
That's how it works.
I think that may actually become a new mode of citizenship. I think we can do that in this sort of the new tech age. I think that actually fits quite nicely. You can reside wherever the majority or plurality of your Twitter followers are.
That makes perfect sense. Well, we promised lots of Blue Jays stuff for people, some big picture stuff. They're leading MLB. They're leading the American League in attendance, only behind the Dodgers, Cards, and Giants. But we'll hold that for a sec, because we've got you for some extra time, more than we usually get you for in the morning show, which our listeners will appreciate. Tell us first about the format change in the All-Star game, where it won't decide home advantage for the World Series. The American League's won 11 of the last 14 games, and you can't make the case that the AL's been trying more than the NL. But for people who, this was heavily criticized towards Bud Selig, which he implemented after the infamous tie game that went 11 innings. But once that came in, I think people got used to it meaning something, and now people want to absolutely make sure that every player, every manager is ultimately committed to giving a great show in this game and trying to win for their league, right?
Right, Greg. And I think one of the key things that's happened here with the way that it's been changed and the reasons why, I think baseball smartly realizes what the All-Star game is and should be, which is a showcase of their best stars to the rest of the world. And I think specifically to trying to grow your viewing audience and your social media audience in North America. And you can do some different things with your game in terms of players that you have involved or even in-game. I mean, gimmicks is probably too strong a word, but just interesting little features you can add to it. If you're not tying it to the outcome of your championship, you have a little more license and a little more leeway to do, whether it's more social media friendly things, and I think lighten it up a little bit. And I think that we saw in the Home Run Derby, certainly with Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger and Miguel Sano, there's so much great young talent in the game. And these are all millennials. They understand the principles of social media, that they understand how to have fun and how to put on a good show. And Aaron Judge talked about that a lot on Monday night, about how what a great show it was. And I think that's very well placed here. This is our, as somebody who loves baseball, this is our showcase week of the whole season. Because in October, in the playoffs, you've got, of course, the NHL starting up, the NFL is going, college football is going here in the States. There are many other things that are distracting you. But this is the week where baseball can really market itself and use the platform of a quiet week on the North American sports schedule. I guess Wimbledon aside, my apologies, Caroline, on that. But that's the one thing that's probably going on right now that takes attention away from baseball. So use the platform you have. And I think that once you uncouple it from home field advantage, you can have a little more fun with it. And I think that's really the goal here by MLB.
Watching the home run derby too, and Aaron Judge winning, when you saw him in that swing, you kind of felt like he's going to be in this home run derby for years and years and years to come. When was the last time, or was there a time where you saw a star player like Aaron Judge?
Well, he, Carolyn, for me, he really gets it. And I think his interview after with Buster Olney, his sort of post-derby interview, just watching it from having watched a lot of these and from having been involved in some of his interviews as well over the years, he just has that great affect about him where you can tell he's a superstar. And he's got that way about him. It almost is Jeter-esque, even the way that he talks. It's a similar pacing and just demeanor when he's on the big stage or even just in the interview. So I think he presents himself so well. And I believe that his swing, I thought it was interesting to hear Cody Bellinger talk about it as the broadcast was going along, that he was mishitting balls to right field and they were still going out, which people almost never are even aware of the opposite field during a home run derby, let alone mishitting balls and having them go out of the ballpark. So he's a special talent. He has, I think, been selective. I think people talk about the approach that he has had as being really exceptional. He is, as the year has gone along, I think too, Carolyn, the way that you see the game right now and how advanced the scouting reports are, we talk about in years gone by, we talked about the sophomore slump and how numbers would come back down to earth. Well, now it's like your second week slump because the word gets out about you that quickly and your weaknesses, whatever you have, they're all exposed on video and everybody's got every single freeze frame of things and they can pick up on your tendencies so quickly now that almost if you have gotten through a half season, I'm not going to say that you're good forever, but it means more now than it did before because there's more scouting information out there against you. So for me, I think he, in some respects, his average is a bit higher even than Bellinger's average is. I think he strikes out less than Bellinger does. Bellinger still is a phenomenal talent and belonged in that derby as well. But Judge, I think he gets it. He really, I think, commands the strike zone very well on his own way. And I hope personally that I think unlike maybe what the dunk contest has been in the NBA in years gone by, that the best, the superstar players still play and participate in the Derby every year because I really do think it really elevates the profile of the event. And this year, the hype about Bellinger, Judge, Stanton as the hometown guy, I think really took that whole event to the next level.
Let's stay with Judge in New York for just a sec. 2 years ago, I go to New York in the summer in late August, and it was obvious it was, at that point, the Mets had kind of taken over, and they had a real window. Everybody loved their pitching staff. They loved Cespedes. And they ended up obviously going to the World Series that year against Kansas City. You watch the Yankees in that wild card game that year. I'm not even sure it sold out. There were a lot of empty seats. They lost to Houston 1-0. I would bet, and this is something I think for Jays fans to feel jealous about, there's been a bit of a pendulum swing. There's a bunch of young players under the age of 27 who are excellent for the Yankees, including some injured players. Starlin Castro is injured right now, who they got in a trade. Aaron Hicks is injured. Never mind just Judge and Gary Sanchez. The last time I checked for the Jays, the only notable position player under the age of 28 is Devin Travis, and he's on the shelf again for a long, long time. Have the Yankees won not just Manhattan, but the entire New York City back away from the Mets?
That's a very good point, Greg, and I think that probably has happened. Now, I mean, these we have to remember, of course, in New York, there's not a whole lot of people are going to be switching loyalties here and there, but I do think that the Yankee fans on Wall Street have, I think, regained the bragging rights rather quickly. You're right, the Mets had their moment, and I think if there's one lesson there, it is the fleeting nature of what seems to be overwhelmingly strong rotations because the Mets had everything going for them, young pitchers, power arms coming into their primes. We thought it was going to be DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey, Mats, Wheeler for years in a row. And clearly the health has not held up for multiple guys in that group. And we see where the Mets are now really an afterthought all of a sudden in the National League East. So you're right, it happened very quickly. And I really think, too, part and parcel to the Jays' ascent in 15 and 16 was that sort of aging group of Yankees. And the key thing that Brian Cashman did, and again, we haven't really even seen it too much to this point in time because the guys they got in these trades haven't necessarily impacted the Major League roster, but they make the tough call. They are basically in it last year, and they don't just give up the rental in Chapman. They give up Miller as well. And they get back a raft of prospects, which I think is now a nice bulwark for them in the future, where they can actually now, if they have to trade and make some moves this year, they can do it without feeling like they're really taking all of the depth away from their minor leagues. Clearly, the Gleyber Torres injury has worked against them. The Dustin Fowler injury, same thing. But they're in a good place overall with their farm system. And when the Yankees are in a good place with their farm system and they've got young players and they look towards the future when, obviously, Alex's money is gone from the books and CeCe's money is gone from the books, and they can make a big-time run at a free agent like a Harper or a Machado or even a Donaldson, they're dangerous. And so I think there was a window there, I think, where they were down a bit and the Red Sox were kind of finding their way as well, and the Jays took advantage in 15 and 16. I think now the Yankees are getting their footing a bit now, and it looks like it's going to be, I think, a while for them to now be at the top of the division, or at least close to it because of the way they're set up.
Well, in talking about the farm system, I think a concern for a lot of Jays fans is there's not a ton of players readily available at the upper part of their prospects, right? Who are ready to go into the bigs right now. And I think that's especially noticeable now that we're looking ahead to trade deadline. There was the Futures game on Sunday ahead of the All-Star game, and we saw Jays prospects like Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and then they were promoted to single-A Dunedin. How far away are these two guys from coming up to the majors?
Carolyn, and it's a really important one for the Jays because they have to figure out where they're trending and tracking those two players in particular, Vlad Jr. and Bichette, because that, to me, is going to have a really key decision and impact on what the Jays do with Donaldson. Donaldson, of course, a free agent after 2018, and from what I can tell from speaking with sources here the last week or so, there's been no real momentum on a long-term deal for him with the club. That's not to say it's going to change. I mean, it certainly could change in the future where maybe they get some more momentum in the future for a deal with Donaldson. But right now, it doesn't appear to be the case. And when you think about this, Carol, I mean, if we think about what happened with Bichette and Vlad Jr. now getting promoted to single-A, high single-A, it's conceivable that they're going to be major league ready by 2019. And I mean, I suppose an outside chance for next year, maybe late in the season, but more likely they're 2019 arrivals, which is the year after Donaldson is going to hit free agency. And so you think about the left side of the infield. Now, maybe they can play on the right side and you move them around a bit. Sure, that's a possibility. But I think one reason why the Jays may not be quite as aggressive with Donaldson on a long-term deal is this. If you think that Bichette and Vlad Jr. can play on the left side. Now, Bichette's been playing short, and Vlad Jr.'s been playing third. If you think they can play on the left side, and you already have Tulo signed to a deal that's really difficult to move, basically an unmovable contract based on the fact that he has not hit that well, and his defense, by the metrics, has regressed a bit. So could you really, if you've got two good prospects on the left side of the infield, can you really justify extending a second player well into his 30s in Donaldson at third base? If you feel like you can move those guys somewhere else to the right side, then maybe it makes sense. But to me, Carolyn, I think they may want to retain that flexibility there with Donaldson and then allow themselves to play around and maybe get some younger guys in that club. I think that's a really key consideration. It's tough for them because clearly every Jays fan wants Donaldson to stay. But it's when you think about the roster and the money and the maneuverability and the flexibility that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are going to want to have, I think it becomes a difficult decision there on Josh Donaldson.
Is it possible then, or is it even realistic for the Jays to do much before trade deadline, whether that means getting better in the now or getting better for the future? Do they have enough prospects and players on this team who are movable?
Well, a couple things there. I think that they can certainly, it depends on how Liriano and Estrada pitch. I think those are appealing guys to National League clubs if they come out of the break and are throwing well and are healthy. I think that is a key thing for them there. I think we have to see how they're doing. Clearly, Marco struggled a lot at the end of the first half, which I think certainly will hurt his chances to be dealt. Jose Bautista, also a free agent, potentially after the season is over. Again, he had somewhat of a limited market during the offseason. So I think that, again, maybe there's a way to have him be a player for a particular club, maybe nationally, maybe American League for Jose, as sort of a complementary outfielder. But in neither of those, none of those three cases, are they really going to get back, I think, a lot of value. I think those are rental moves, players that have okay value in some cases, but probably not extremely high value. I think that's the tough decision for the Jays is going to be looking at what do they do with Hap and Donaldson. To me, the three free agents to be, that's an almost easy decision. You're in last place. You probably should move those guys if you can get something for them. But the Donaldson-Hap decisions are much more difficult because then you look at it and say, okay, well, now I'm compromising and impacting my ability to win next year, which I'm not sure if hearing what Mark Shapiro has said in recent days, if he's ready to go there. But again, you look at the big picture, and if you feel like the Yankees and Blue Jays are going to be really good the next couple of years, the Yankees and Red Sox are going to be very good the next couple of years, you get to look at that possibility of saying, you know what, maybe we do reset a bit and look towards more 2019 when Bichette is up and Vlad Jr. is up, and you maybe look towards that point when you still have Sanchez and Stroman. It's a very, very tough decision, Carolyn, and I think that they're probably weighing that out right now, near-term, long-term. My sense is they probably don't trade Happ and Donaldson, but I know there's going to be a lot of offers and probably a lot of teams asking them about those two players.
So, big picture stuff. The game, the sport itself seems really healthy. I was thinking coming in today how we've had three NFL. The NFL is the king of the four leagues for attention, for the TV deals, and just for overall eyeballs globally. But MLB is more international. There's stability with the franchises. Tampa seems the only team we talk about distinctly, and we do it especially those three days the Jays play in Montreal in March. We do it a lot,
right.
And Oakland looks like they're going to get a stadium deal set. Do you look and go, it is in Rob Manfred, would he think it's in a really good place? And is it more, John, is it more regional where it is, where we don't watch national matchups anymore? We don't have these benchmark moments like we did when we were kids, like the Saturday game of the week and when ESPN got Sundays and Monday Night Baseball on ABC, because we get all the games. And there's something, maybe there's something a little less special about the televised baseball game, but that doesn't matter. TV numbers are amazing, and in all the markets combined, there's never been more people watching Major League Baseball. How do you see it?
Well, Greg, I think you're hitting on a lot of the key points there, is that if you added everything up, if you added up all the local ratings over the course of the week and put them in aggregate and compare them to what the NFL gets, that I think MLB wins that the competition over the course of the – but that you have to include all week long all teams in terms of the number of fans and people that are consuming those products and those games. I do think baseball is aware of wanting to try to get a bit more – national profile, or rather regain that status, because of course, as you point out, they used to have it. There are just so many games, and I make the parallel all the time that of course, living in a college football town in Michigan, that you look at it and say, if you want to follow U of M and watch every Michigan game and be up on Michigan, you've got to invest like 3.5 hours of your week, and then you're basically good. You can have any office discussion you want with your friends or coworkers the whole rest of the week by watching that one game on Saturday. To be a dedicated baseball fan, that's 21 hours of your week. Sometimes more.
More.
Exactly. That's like a part-time job. So I really think that when you think about the way that the baseball is consumed and the schedule, it is a little bit incongruous with the way that we all live right now in 2017. It just is. Now, I think baseball has very smartly started the conversation about wanting to find ways to make the game shorter. One of the great things about soccer that, I mean, I as a young parent love, is that you're there on a Saturday morning, you can turn on the game, or Sunday morning, and it's going to take 2 hours, and it happens in a very set amount of time before your day really gets going. And you can kind of be around the house, and it's a very narrow time span at a good time of day when not a lot of stuff is going on. And I think that baseball is in a more of a difficult window from a standpoint of the competition of other entertainment and your phone and other options and the overall length of time that each game takes. So those are all structural things they're trying to work through. But from the standpoint of the quality of the game and the quality of the play, I think it's never been better. And to your point about Manfred and talking about the growth of the game and the health of franchises, he spoke at the All-Star game the day before about expansion, which he is sort of warmed up to this idea more and more in the last probably couple of years, talking about wanting to be a growth business and take the game to new places. And he mentioned Montreal specifically. He mentioned Montreal, Charlotte, Mexico City. Of course, he can't expand until there's a situation where Tampa and Oakland at least get answers on their stadiums. They have to find either a yes or no, up or down. They've got to have a new stadium, or at least a plan, or maybe even a no, and then they can move the franchise if they have to. But they want to get answers from those two places, which they hope they'll have in the next year or so. And then if that progresses well, then you can at least explore the possibility of an expansion scenario, and Vegas maybe is an option too, although Vegas is getting pretty crowded right now. You look at other options there. I think that's why Montreal is so appealing, because they've got a ballpark they can play on a short term. They know it will work there because it did work there in the past. They have to find that other spot, and I think Mexico is going to be a real key part for baseball to really find a way to, I think, get more into that market. And the commissioner's actually said he really wants to explore that possibility very, very seriously with the union, of course, as well in the years to come.
When's the soonest, though, that we could see a team in Montreal?
I think that the odds there, Carolyn, for me, I think that I would say in 10 years, and maybe even 5 years, but I think probably 10 years is a more realistic horizon. One way or the other, I do believe there will be the Expos back. I think one way or the other. I think that the Rays, they're of the two teams, Rays and A's, the Rays, I believe, are the more likely one to move if it comes to that. And there's some optimism. It depends on who you talk to about how much progress they're making. My concern about Montreal is, let's say the Rays build a new park and the A's build a new park, and so they're at 30 teams, they all have ballparks, and now they say, okay, now it's time to expand. Well, Montreal for me is a really strong candidate to be one of those two teams if they go to 32, but I'm not sure if there's that other pairing where you know what the 32nd city is. And of course, in baseball, unlike hockey, you cannot play with an odd number of teams. You just can't do it. So you've got to find that partner, and I think politically, economically, Mexico, there are some barriers there. I think that you have to, collectively build that culture where players expect to play there every year, and players that are drafted there are comfortable with the notion of their whole life being built there in a different country, which even we've seen with the Jays, there are some players that have not wanted to sign in Toronto for that reason, I think, as time has gone on in the past. But I think structurally as well, you have to find a way, you look at the prices that they've charged for Mexican League games, both in the summer and winter in Mexico, they're well below what you would charge for a Major League game. Economically speaking, is that viable? Will they pay Major League prices 81 days a year? Those are big questions that I think baseball has to find a way to answer. But there's no question that if there was a way to make it work economically, the notion of, and you're seeing it in Toronto right now and across Canada, when you've got one team for a whole country that buys into it, the ratings are sensational. I mean, the ratings are phenomenal. The Jays have, I believe, the best ratings of any team in baseball. So if you're able to put a team in Mexico City or really anywhere in Mexico, if you get the whole country to buy in, to really it's probably second or third most popular sport after soccer in America. Football actually is pretty popular there. If baseball is at that level in Mexico, the ability with the sponsorships and TV would be extraordinary and an automatic slam dunk for MLB to get involved in that way. So I think they have to find some ways to get the union on board, to get the figure out the economics of it from a standpoint of ticket prices. But if they can do that in Mexico City, then I think that your 31st and 32nd teams for me would be Montreal, Mexico City.
There's a bit of drama in the league right now, and it's divided between the players and MLB, specifically pitchers, where a lot of people are saying that the balls are different this year. The balls are juiced, and Major League Baseball is coming out and saying they're not any different. We haven't talked about them being different. It's the same ball. So, I mean, home runs are up, and they're expected to keep going up this season as the season continues. So, I mean, who should we believe? Are the balls different, or are they not?
Personally, Carolyn, I think they're different. Now, the difference, there are multiple ways to sort of interpret the word different, as I'm using it there. Do I think they're chemically different with different components and different ingredients, if you will? No, I think that when baseball says it's the same materials as before, I accept that explanation. But I also think that if you wind them tighter, if you wind them differently, if you wind them a little more compactly, and you change the density of them, then you get balls that fly further. And when you look at the uptick in home runs, the percentage of balls that are going out that are fly balls, I'm not saying that this is the sole reason, because I think there's many reasons at play here, including the launch angle thought process by hitters, I think the velocity by pitchers. But if you're hearing, and you hear what Stroman talked about the seams, if the seams are recessed deeper into the ball, and that is part of the reason why we're seeing all these blisters, and that's why maybe we're seeing straighter fastballs, and then therefore there's less resistance aerodynamically once they're in the air, it all makes sense to me that if the seams are even recessed deeper into the ball by a fraction of a millimeter, it would have an impact. And I think that we're seeing that right now. So again, is baseball telling the truth when it says the composition is the same? I believe they are. But if they're manufactured even just a little bit differently, a little bit tighter, then I think we're seeing a residue of that among many other factors right now in baseball.
We could use another cork bat crisis where someone crawls through the clubhouse roof panels to
There's
steal.
A smoking gun right there, the cork bat.
Yeah, we need roof clubhouse panels, the umpire's room, coming down from the ceiling, going back up through the. We need more of those sort of stories like we had with the Albert Bell scandal. We need that.
Well, we could, and who knows? Maybe we're not that far away from that occurring. I remember back, this is actually before the home run spike occurred. I remember there was a game at Coors Field where Tim Lincecum was convinced that the balls that he was using were juiced, and that the Rockies pitchers were using the balls that had been put in the humidor to bring them more into atmospheric normal conditions. So there, of course, were allegations of subterfuge there. There are still allegations every now and then you hear about sign stealing, which is all, I think, all fair game as long as it happens on the field of play. But you're right, Greg. We are long overdue for a good scandal, yeah, as it relates to cork bats or some other implement that's given someone an unfair advantage. So we'll see. I think the scientific breakdowns and Bill Nye the Science Guy routines on the baseball are probably going to continue as long as the home run rate is what it is.
You do know, being a boyhood Tigers fan, I'm still convinced in the Metrodome they blew the air out for the Twins hitters.
Oh,
and
no
in
question
yeah,
about
exactly.
No
and
question
and
about it, Greg.
Yes, exactly. There's a reason they were 8-0 in home playoff games in 1987 and 1991. Before you go, folks get to hear you here. They get to see you here. Can you still? You're an amazing fan of baseball. Can you still get lost in a game? We all know the business sort of it can damage, if you will, the fandom, because you're working on stories and you're working on being the best best broadcaster, best writer you can be. Can you still get lost in a game from time to time, or do you do enough? You love hockey, you love soccer. Do you do enough to step away from it from time to time?
I'm lucky that I get to do what I love, Greg. That's how I feel. And we had a great conversation there in Detroit recently about just how we both love the game and really all these sports. I mean, I feel very fortunate to do it, and I was even telling my dad when I saw him a couple of days ago that really when I get a chance to do sideline reporting at a game and I'm in the camera while I'm on the field, I look around and there's like major league players that are standing right on the other side of a railing from me, and I'm getting ready to be part of a broadcast. I do get chills, and I do think about my father, my grandfather, who gave the love of the game to me. So it really is. It's special to get the chance to go to the ballpark, and I always say that this is what I'll keep doing until someone tells me it's time to get a real job or I actually have to sit in an office or something like that. But I'm hoping to keep that from getting keep that from coming too soon, I suppose. But to me, Greg, it's just I'm lucky to do it, and I still do feel like I can still retain a certain love of the game. I think you have to. I think that if you don't love it, frankly, if you don't love it. And you don't retain that quality of loving it, then I think the hours and the sacrifices you make to travel and everything that we do, you'll be sitting at an airport and at 4 a.m, getting ready to fly out on a to make sure you get there for the off day availability, and you're two rounds deep in the playoffs and you're tired. To me, what keeps you going is that you love it, and then you realize that when you are on the air, you're part of something special, and that people really do care about it, and that you get the interactions from fans that say, hey, I appreciate the broadcast or whatever it was, just that they enjoy the interaction. I think that's special, and that affirms what we're doing. So for me, I think it's my own love of the game, and certainly the feedback that I get from people that feel the same way as I do, that we have the chance to celebrate something pretty special. And this is, sports still, I think, in the U.S. and Canada, it's something that we all enjoy and can participate in collectively. And I think that you set aside the various divisions that have come about, whether it's through age or social media or politics, whatever it is, we can all get together and talk about these things that we love. And so I feel like it's a special responsibility to be part of that, part of society that really is a coming together in both of our countries. And I just I feel very lucky to do what I do.
Well, and JP, that being said, I hope that Greg didn't ruin your experience at the Tigers game that day. I hope he wasn't bothering you.
No, it was
bothering you?
No, I saw him tweeting the photos from me up from the press from above the press box and say, "Hey, Greg, you're like not far from me, man. It's been a long time since I've talked to you off the air.
Yeah.
I want to be able to just kind of catch up as I used to back in the day when he was in Detroit." So it was great to be able to catch up, meet his boys, phenomenal kids. So it was great to I guess be Greg an auxiliary member of the Brady family vacation for like a couple hours.
Oh, sure. And you'd flashback to the first few years of Comerica Park when two grown men could share a whole row because
exactly.
It was not a well attended. Yeah, we couldn't have had that
exactly.
much space
it's
5 years ago.
Yeah, I know, Greg.
The run's probably over. The run looks pretty over there.
It does. I tell you what, I think the Jays, I'll say this definitively, the Jays still have more hope in their overall picture right now than do the Detroit Tigers.
That's absolutely accurate. Well, we hope you enjoy All-Star Week and more appearances on Bob McCown's show, more appearances with the starting lineup in the morning, and we can't thank you enough for doing this. And to let us in on that extra Twitter info that you have more followers in Ontario than any of the 50 U.S. states, 48 contiguous, or Alaska or Hawaii, it's remarkable. We're happy about this.
There is a bit of, as you know, what makes it remarkable is, so California has, what, 5 baseball teams? They've got a lot of people, probably more people than certainly Ontario has.
Yes.
And Ontario, though, that's what I'm saying, man. I feel very much at home now. I've got my Nexus pass, so I'm not quite halfway to citizenship, but I think I'm probably a quarter of the way there. And I always appreciate the chances to come to Canada whenever I'm able to get there during the course of the year.
Well, we love doing this. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
That was John Morosi. You can follow him on Twitter. Be one of the many. @ John Morosi, Morosi. And as a quick point of reference, 13 million people in Ontario, 39 in California. So we are representing well in... Well, it's not one area code, but the ONT, that's not a thing. I
no.
don't know. It's not like
it doesn't
BC
sound
or
very
no,
cool.
or PEI. It doesn't,
no.
the ONT doesn't.
If
doesn't
Drake
work
says
terribly
it,
well.
then it'll be
yeah.
a thing.
You need it. Yeah, you need
it
in song lyrics.
I don't think we have that cachet
to pull it off. So, yeah, great to have him. All-Star Week, good time to get him as well. And,
mm-hmm.
and interesting stuff. He kind of went in the direction of some of the big picture Blue Jay stuff we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing this week, too. I mean, we always worry that this is kind of the dog week of summer, if that makes sense. It's the slowest week of the sports calendar year, especially Wednesday night when there's nothing going on. But this year for the Blue Jays, just because of where they are and the bad start that they have had to this season, they're kind of in flux because they're still... The thing is, as bad a start as it was, and for everything that went wrong with the injuries, the offense not producing, they're still only 5 games back of the wild card.
Yeah. They're as close as they were 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That said, they can't really...
But it feels so far.
Yeah, there's no
yeah.
and there's no prospect base to empty out.
No.
Like Alex Anthopoulos did, probably thinking or knowing that he wasn't going to be back with the team and saying, we are all in as it gets. We're pushing indeed all in. And it is, I'd rather have a week like this, because Wimbledon's still on, I'd rather this than pretend really important things are happening in NFL preseason games, which has to happen. That's the longest preseason known to mankind, where the fewest things happen and really good players are either not playing or they're just hoping they don't get hurt because there's more likelihood of an injury. Now, there's only so much we can say about Wimbledon, but it is exciting to have, this is the third year in a row, and it was such a big moment last year on the Friday to have Milos Raonic play Roger Federer, and he won handily to make it to the final, where Andy Murray won handily and won his second Wimbledon. But people do ask me, they're like, Carolyn is such a Roger Federer fan, but this would be such another
Greg,
big Canadian.
I'm an unbiased journalist. I don't know where you're
This would be another big Canadian tennis
from.
Moment. So do you have mixed? Do you win either way in a Raonic Federer quarterfinal this week?
Yes.
You do?
I just want to see good tennis. I want to see a good match like what we had last year. Let's get a 5-setter. Not a blowout. Not a blowout either way.
Yeah,
I just want to see good tennis. That's kind of how I am now for most sports. I just want to see good games, good playoffs, good tournaments.
By the way,
it's a win-win.
I do want to know. We didn't plan this, but I was. We didn't do a podcast last week when a lot of the John McEnroe, Serena Williams stuff got put to bed. What did you? I want to know what you thought of everything and the initial comment, how it was asked, how it was phrased, and then sort of the because it became a big story. It was on the NBC Nightly News one of the nights I checked in on the NBC Nightly News.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about it just before you went on vacation, where I'm of the mindset John McEnroe, and he talked about Novak Djokovic and his his life and his marital status and what was up with that. I mean, he just talks about whatever he wants to, and he's unapologetic about it. So when he says things like Serena Williams is would be 700 or something in the world if she played the men's circuit, I'm not personally offended. It's just McEnroe being McEnroe. And I don't think he was trying to be rude or disrespectful. I think he was kind of forced into a certain question, a certain answer. Now, he's a grown man and knows how to intelligently answer those questions or get out of things. But he was saying that she wouldn't be one of the top players. He just said it in kind of an outlandish, exaggerated way.
I think to be
But it's McEnroe.
It's McEnroe.
It's not...
And to be picky, I think 700 is... It's too low. If I'm being specific to it, often the comparison has been the number one women's player to the number 100 men's player. It's not meant to be demeaning, but I do think he was sort of taken aback. I would have asked to clarify the question because the interviewer, to me, wasn't, and her background on NPR is that of not sports, of a lot more important stuff than sports. So it's not like she's a moron, but she asked a question that didn't come from a sports knowledge base. And people think they can do that. The question was, is she the greatest female player ever? And John's like, absolutely. Well, why qualify it? Some say she's the greatest ever. And my reaction would have been like McEnroe's, who says that? If you want to go, she's a more accomplished champion than any man who's ever played. I'd get that because
yes,
of the amount
is.
Of right because
yeah.
the amount of and Martina Navratilova was at one point to me more dominant than any man. But we're not picking up Martina Navratilova and dropping her on the men's ATP tour in 1986. We're not doing those things. So I think the question needed more clarification. But like I said, you know this with sports. You love sports. They just give anybody sports interviews and sports questions, whereas if something was to do with neuroscience,
mm-hmm.
I might go, I'm not sure I'm qualified. But nobody ever says that about sports.
No.
Nobody ever says that about sports.
I'm just kind of tired about the whole thing. Because even, mm-hmm. and McEnroe said in the past, too, if you think of the names that have changed tennis, regardless if it's male or female, you think of people like Serena Williams. She's
totally.
Changed the game. And to me, that's all that matters. She's a great champion. And that's... You can't take that away from her.
I think that I remember saying to people when I was a kid, like a teenager, the best rivalry at that time was Navratilova and Everett. And then it became Graf and Navratilova. And because you just saw them play more than any two men played each other for the longest stretch, maybe until Sampras Agassi, to be perfectly honest. In my youth, to where I'm in college, to where I've got a job, to where I'm in my mid-20s. And that was all before Federer, Nadal, Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And Djokovic. It was all before the big four just started to dominate, and you go, it's Federer and Nadal again. That's interesting. But is it? I mean, it was one of those scenarios, and Serena was just part of a really, really vibrant growth of women's tennis with a lot of exceptional players around her, to the point where, as I've made this point before, CBS said, let's put the women's final on Monday night. We don't want the men. We want the women on Monday night in prime time. Let's sparkle this tournament up. Let's market the personalities. And it worked. It really did work. And I think the women's tournament, you know, though it's in Toronto this year, has been at a lower ebb for a while. But don't blame Serena for that. She's keeping up her end of the bargain.
Yeah.
And now having a baby, which... doesn't help the tour dates, but nonetheless, that's her prerogative, that's her one, and it'll be fascinating to see her come back.
Oh, and she will come back.
And she will come back.
I mean,
like
she
Kim
said
Kleister's
she'll
did.
Come back, and I believe she'll come back. And
absolutely.
Can you imagine, too, if she wins another slam after coming back?
By the way, related, the Battle of the Sexes movie still, I meant to tell you the date for it. It's September 22nd with Emma Stone,
the gorgeous
Elizabeth Shue, and Steve Carell playing Bobby Riggs.
What?
And Emma Stone. Yeah, I'm shocked you haven't seen the trailer. And
no.
Emma Stone playing Billie Jean King.
Oh, you know what I did see, though? And sorry, you look scared.
No.
And we talked about this a couple podcasts ago. I saw Wonder Woman, and it was awesome.
Oh, did you really?
It was so good.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was so good. And I swear, anytime I go work out now since I've seen it, it's a better workout because I begin to think I'm
That's
Wonder
energized.
Woman.
You'll become Wonder Woman at
yes.
a certain point in time?
Yeah. I don't think it's possible, but, you know.
Yeah. I wonder, now I'm throwing this again.
Oh.
What's that?
Oh, sorry. I'm just
tell me what you see.
I'm reading about the movie. No, I haven't seen the trailer for this.
It's very
for
good.
For Battle of the Sexes.
It's got me really
1973
interested.
Tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs.
That's right.
How did I not know about this?
Like, I'm too young for it. You're too young
what
for it.
What am I
but
doing?
But it will be in. No, it'll be great.
When
it'll
does
be
this
in
come
the,
out? September 22nd.
Yeah.
Mark
you,
that
you
in
and
my
I,
calendar.
You and I should play a match the week of the movie.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
I don't know. I don't know who has more to lose. I would need that long to get ready, I think. I don't know what the odds makers would have. It would be, we might even be have the same age difference as Riggs and King. I'm not going to be as obnoxious or bold about what would happen. I'd be worried about what would happen. That would be
this,
interesting.
This movie's going to be good. Emma Stone is very talented.
Yeah.
I am now completely not paying attention to recording this podcast. I'm now reading about this.
Well, it's
movie.
Time. It's time for What Up With That.
Oh, so you okay. Really,
yeah,
I'm back.
See that,
hey.
Yeah, well, that didn't take
good
great.
To be here.
Yeah, that took a long time to get you back at that point in time. And putting less, that's like two great flavors of ice cream when I ask you who you want to win between Roundage and Federer. So I didn't, you know.
That's true. It's like picking between mint chocolate chip and chocolate.
Those are your two favorites?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
A lot of variety there.
I know.
It's chocolate based.
At least I didn't say vanilla.
It's not vanilla, no.
Then I would clearly be quite vanilla.
Yeah.
Personality. Okay.
What's up with, you know, what
What
we
up
do
with
here?
That?
Right.
Yeah, what's up with that? Okay, I'm going to start with the most ridiculous one that I've seen. This is the problem with the internet. Well, there's many problems with the internet. But
so many now,
there is a beetle. And the owner of this beetle gives the beetle a pen and marker. I'm not kidding.
I had Paul McCartney or Ringo Starr in my head right away.
His name is Spike the Beetle, and he walks around with this pen marker and draws things, and these are selling. He has nearly 170,000 likes on his or her personal Twitter handle. The question is, what is art? But this is just ridiculous. Look at this. If you're listening, Google this. This is a beetle drawing.
He's got a good grip. He or she has a good grip on that pen. I hate to delineate between
but
the...
why?
Speaking of Battle of the Sexes, I don't want to imply it's male or female.
No, of course.
Sort of like the shark that'll race Michael Phelps in a couple weeks. We don't know. Maybe we won't know.
And it's not important.
No. I was going to say I'm asexual when it comes to sharks. Anyway, but the beetle, that's a lot of people. I'd love to know the demographics and the breakdown
this?
Of that.
Why would you buy? You
artwork
must just
done
have
by a
money
beetle?
To burn if you're, or you just don't care if you buy art by a beetle.
What if you just frame a photograph of the beetle drawing? Isn't that more
Actually,
interesting
that
from
is
someone
more...
entering your abode, your house or condo, and someone,
imagine?
What is that? And then you got an explanation of it. You're like, well, it's a beetle that draws.
I like how what up with that, too. It's not always a question. I just share really ridiculous things that bother me.
Well, it's
on
your
mind. Oh, he's 6 months old.
Spike
is 6 months old. How? They can live from 2 to 5 years. But even by his species standards, his art world success is in its infancy. Infancy, excuse me.
Yeah, he's very young. By the way, I saw the oldest captive hippo in the world pass away yesterday.
Oh.
Guess the age of that hippo, because I would never, and you'll be low on the guess.
82.
Well, okay, you're not. 65. I thought that's a long...
I went high just because you said
like, imagine being 35, working at a zoo, you get a baby hippo in, and you're like, this thing's outliving me. Like, you don't feel that way about animals. You're like, because people can go through cycles of dogs and cats, and you get your 16, 17 years if you're really, really lucky. But here's a six... Like, there's a six-decade hippo.
We really don't know much about animals.
No. What else is... any other non-animal...
Yes. Yeah, back to our favorite, least favorite family... The Ball family, LeVar Ball and company, they're going to have a reality show, which I say I won't watch, but I might. And he was captured on TMZ, and TMZ was suggesting to LeVar that they are the Kardashians. And he did not appreciate being compared to the Kardashians, even though they're the Kardashians, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, there's no women. I mean, the mom.
No, but
the
I mean the
very,
idea. The idea yeah. of it. It's just a family that wants to be famous.
He handles the camera well. There's no question he knows how to. I just wonder, you know how you wonder if some people are like they are 24/7. Or they just, like Howard Stern goes home and he's probably normal when he does it. Like he takes a nap, he goes to a Little League game and he's not like all over the place and with loud voice. But I can't tell if LeVar is just, could you see quiet LeVar at the grocery store?
No.
Where he's just kind of, hey.
No, he'd be yelling
loud
about
pronouncements.
Apples.
You're really not into it. Now, I'd ask, does this make you root against Lonzo?
No, and that's what's interesting. It's hard to because he's fun to watch and watching a bit of Summer League, too.
Yeah, he's going to be
great.
Even
though there's no defense.
There's no defense.
It's still fun to watch.
But I think...
He's a great passer.
His passing ability is going to be game-changing in the NBA.
I'm just a little embarrassed because I think I am part of the Ball family problem where... I give them a lot of attention as I talk about them, even though they bother me.
We just did. What did you make of the... Now, the price came out for the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight, and it's in late August.
Mm-hmm.
And a price tag, and I haven't seen it on the Rogers availability yet, but it's $99.95 US dollars. Now, I want to say I paid $89 because I had people over for Mayweather-Pacquiao, and I liked that it was an event. But is there ever, I remember when pay-per-view came out, they did sort of random games in the mid-90s, and they said, this game's $7.95, this game's $8.95, before every game was available to everybody. But I do wonder if some people, like I have a friend who's a cricket fan, and he pays pay-per-view for these huge, long cricket tournaments.
Well,
or rugby even, right? Like world sports that people are really interested in. There's a huge cricket pay-per-view market.
I will not be paying, though, for the fight. I will not be paying that. So I'll either go watch it at someone's place and be a mooch, I guess.
Well, would you bring...
Or I'll probably go out and watch it.
Would you be more likely... You know, somebody has you over and you're like, okay, well, we'll get a bottle of wine, or it's sort of like... It's an unannounced potluck thing and you ask what you can bring. What if someone says, like... Hey, you're
cash.
Here. Yeah.
Is that what you do? Hey, guys, come over, watch the fight, bring 20.
I'm sure that's what college students do. But line the pockets a little bit. This dinner wasn't free tonight. Cost me $100 to, like, if you brought a band in, right, you would say, God, the band wasn't free. Their expenses weren't free. So neither is McGregor Mayweather.
Yeah, I think I'll go watch at a bar.
You will?
None of my friends would be watching.
No.
No.
What about WWE Battleground, which is available? Never mind. I don't feel like that's in our in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
Do we have one more to end on? I think we got time.
You want to?
Yeah, let's fire it up.
Okay, so center court at Wimbledon is the mecca, of course, right? Nicest court in the world.
Sure.
Especially at the start of the tournament. Well, if you build it, they will come, right? Well,
that's the thought.
A man in Iowa on a farm, he made a replica on his lawn of the All England Lawn and Tennis Club. And it's called the All Iowa Lawn and Tennis Club. And people come from miles away to come play on this court on his yard.
I'm now seeing a picture of it. And it's from, like, why Iowa? This is where they set Field of Dreams. And now this farmer's done this here.
He built it, and people are coming. It's really quite cool. I recommend everyone watches the video. He's just a huge tennis fan.
But how often do you think it gets used? And then can he, like, they have the best gardeners and whatnot at the All England Club. Gardener's not the right word. Maintenance people for
He interned with them, though, at Wimbledon to learn how to maintain the court.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. It's just very cool. I mean, would you ever... Is there anything you would want to build a replica of?
Oh, boy.
Can you imagine having your own tennis
court? No, but just having the space. I know people that have the space. Or you go to a big backyard and you say, you could at least have a golf hole or two here.
Right.
Like, why not?
A basketball court?
Sometimes you drive by houses and you see that they do have a golf hole. And you're like, what was the motivation for it beyond the obvious, which is to just make your own little par 3 two-hole course?
If I could afford it growing up, which is very unlikely, but if maybe I win the lottery or something, I would build, and you have the space, I would build a basketball court. Or no, I'd build a tennis court, and then you can play basketball on one end. That's realistic, right?
How many square feet do you have now in your downtown?
Just under 700 square feet.
Okay. It's not London or New York, I guess.
I said Toronto later. I said when I'm older.
Yeah, we'll give you a window of time.
Baby steps, you know?
To do it. Find us on iTunes. Rate us on iTunes.
Yes.
Especially the Beatles story. Because where else were you going to find that?
Probably
audio-wise.
On Twitter or Google.
Yeah,
or
any of those.
Daily Mail or...
Our thanks to John Morosi. You can find us on iTunes. Find us on sportsnet.ca/590. And we'll both be back next week. Soon, you will be gone for the week of Rogers Cup. We've got a couple more weeks until then.
That's coming up fast.
It's coming up real fast. So we'll enjoy the rest of Wimbledon. Please do join us next week on Point Taken.
See ya.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.